He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better.
Geraldo.
77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
You ever see a Rolling Stones show live?
I have.
I love Mick Jagger. I mean, I've known him forever. Born in exactly the same month as me and still rocking. Just announcing now they're coming back to North America starting May 24th, 15 cities. Not here, sadly, but they're playing San Diego, Pittsburgh, Raleigh, Minneapolis, Nashville, Buffalo, Milwaukee, Orlando, Kansas City, Detroit. And among the tour dates, the Indy 500 Motor Speedway. So my question is whether they will keep that date in Indiana if Indiana doesn't repeal its noxious law enabling discrimination. That's what we're going to be talking about in the early part of the show, along with my fundamental problem with Republicans in general. I don't know why my political party keeps insisting that our worldview, our moral values, are the only ones that count. So I'm wondering, unless Mike Pence is going to speak at 11 o'clock.
That's right.
So in about 50 minutes from now, we'll cover it live. The governor of Indiana, pretty reasonable seeming attractive guy until he took this leap off the cliff there. But I think it's time for a reality check. And my feeling that why Republicans stand an excellent chance of losing the White House for the third time in a row in 2016. The fundamental problem, and there is a fundamental problem, it's the insistence that too many members of the GOP and certainly the leadership about that worldview, about our moral values, that we're the only legitimate ones. Take Chris Christie. Relatively moderate state, New Jersey, a blue state. He's a Republican, gets elected, even though the Democrats were in the majority there. I'm still a resident of the Garden State, even though I'm in the process now of transitioning back to the east side of the Hudson River. Anyway, Governor Christie, aside from doing everything he could possibly do after the legislators passed this medical marijuana, Christie's doing everything he can possibly do to stymie that program, to cut it down. And now he has just announced, our governor has just announced, that he's backing draft legislation to ban abortions after 20 weeks of pregnancy. So he's going to campaign now for this law banning abortion after 20 weeks of pregnancy. Now, personally, I think abortions that late in the term, 5 months, are obscene. Unless there's some kind of medical emergency. But my point is this. The Supreme Court of the United States, the ultimate arbiter of what is constitutional and what is unconstitutional, has ruled in Roe v. Wade and a bunch of other cases. I mean, these are cases that come up they come up as often as the attempts to appeal or repeal, rather, Obamacare. But the Supreme Court has been pretty consistent. They say that even pregnant women have constitutional rights. Guess what? They have the constitutional right of privacy, control over their own bodies, unless and until the unborn child can exist independently. So the Supreme Court has ruled on Roe v. Wade. That is the law of the land. The federal legislation will never survive a constitutional challenge. So why are the old men Republicans like Chris Christie hell-bent on reopening this old wound? How is he doing anyway? What's the scuttlebutt in Jersey on Christie and presidency and all that? Is it generally considered that he's over?
No.
Is he still stubbornly clinging to some hope?
Well, it depends on where you look at. If you look at the polls, New Jersey voters, okay, this is New Jersey voters. He had the lowest approval rating he's ever had since he's been governor.
What is it?
That was last month, 35% approval rating.
Pretty low.
But that said, anytime someone suggests that they're running for president from any state, whether it be a senator or a governor, you can watch their approval ratings fall down. That's not unusual. So, I mean, that may be some of what's happening to him. He set up, of course, this exploratory committee so he can raise funds. Last week, he signed on a digital firm out of Texas that would run all of his outreach online, fundraising and email and website and that type of thing. So he's making every kind of move that looks like he's going to run. Now, if you look at the national polls and how he's doing, he's dead last. He's even after Donald Trump.
Yeah, he's got no chance. He's got no chance.
But he'll tell you that people don't know him yet, and that when he comes out swinging and when you see his platform, which he says he's working on, he's not officially announced, of course, but when they do, he says he thinks that the Republican faithful will be impressed with him.
Well, I have seen his announcement on abortion. I saw his performance on medical marijuana, and I think he's doing what all the Republicans are doing. They are trying to impose a certain set of values and a worldview on everyone else. I want to make a not very dramatic announcement right now, ladies and gentlemen. Unless, this is a pretty big unless, but I mean, this is my announcement. Unless my wife, Erica, and my daughters, Isabella, Simone, Sol, can change my mind and drag me kicking and screaming into the Hillary Clinton camp, I'm resolved to vote for Jeb Bush in 2016. I think he's the only grown-up Republican in the room. He's the only Republican politician in the country with the common sense to compromise on issues like immigration and economic and tax policy, education, national security. But even Governor Bush last night disappointed me. He defends this new law in Indiana that makes it easier for religious conservatives to refuse service to gay people. Governor Bush, my hero, saying that Republican Governor Mike Pence is doing the right thing.
I have it here if you want to hear what he said. Like,
I think if they actually got briefed on the law, that they wouldn't be blasting this law. I think Governor Pence has done the right thing. Florida has a law like this. Bill Clinton signed a law like this at the federal level. This is simply allowing people of faith space to be able to express their beliefs, to be able to be people of conscience. I think once the facts are established, people aren't going to see this as discriminatory at all.
It's bogus. Bogus. Indiana does not have gender discrimination. In other words, there's laws in Indiana against you can't discriminate against black people, race, color, creed, religion. But there's no gender discrimination yet in Indiana. Most states have it. We have it. And all the states in the tri-state have it. Under the Indiana law, the businesses that refuse service, like the wedding cake example that everybody uses, they can use the Indiana law as a defense to a civil suit. In other words, I'm a gay guy. I want to get married. I want you to make me a cake. You say, no, you can't make me a cake. I sue you. You, the baker, can use the new Indiana law as a defense to my suit. I mean, that's what the federal law never had. And what other similar laws around the country don't have. That's what makes the Indiana law so obnoxious. And that, I think, when Mike Pence speaks at what time, 11 o'clock?
11 o'clock.
I think that if he clears that up, that may go a good distance to muting some of the threat to things like the NCAA tournament at the end of the week, the Final Four in Indianapolis, and the Rolling Stones concert in the Indy 500 Speedway. But if he doesn't, I mean, he's screwed and Indiana is screwed. But my bigger point is the Republicans are screwed. Because now you have Bush and Cruz and Rubio all backing this law. And I predict that Indiana, out of its own self-interest, is going to dump this law, but they're going to dramatically dilute it before this week is over. And we're going to see what he says at 11 o'clock. But my point, ladies and gentlemen, is pandering is not policy. Pandering is not policy. Republicans used to be live and let live. What happened to that? And now you have Republicans closing ranks behind Indiana, going to alienate three-quarters of the millennial voters, three-quarters of the female voters. And I think it shows that the party's going to make the same mistake it did the last two times. They're going to campaign on social issues, and people care about economic and foreign policy. If you need any more evidence of what I'm talking about, of how out of touch we are, Republicans are, listen. Listen to this. Reuters had a survey they just concluded. Republicans only were surveyed. Who represents a bigger imminent threat to the United States? I want to say that again. Who represents a bigger imminent threat to the United States? Vladimir Putin of Russia, Bashar Assad of Syria, or Barack Obama, the president of the United States? Guess what? 34% of Republican surveys say Obama represents the biggest threat, the biggest imminent threat to the United States. Barack Obama, 34%. Putin, 25%. The man who dismembered Ukraine and Georgia and threatens the entire stability of Europe, bringing back the Cold War. Putin, 25%. Obama, 34%. Putin, 25%. The barrel bomber, mass murderer, Bashar Assad, 23%. Obama is a more imminent threat to the United States than Assad or Putin. Really? Really? Listening to my voice right now, you're driving a cab, you're in your home, you're in your place of business. Are you really more afraid of your own president than you are afraid of the dictator of Russia or the dictator of Syria? If you are, I really feel sorry for you.
Live and local, the Tri-State's most important issues with Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
25 minutes after 10 o'clock here on 77 WABC, 866-GERALDO, 866-437-2536. What are you thinking about today? We'll start with Gene in Plainview. Hey, Gene, what's up?
Good morning, Geraldo. How you doing?
Good, thanks.
All right, I have to. I think you're going on two counts on this war.
Okay, you're talking about the Indiana law religious freedom law.
To hang it all on the Republicans, I believe a Democrat Congress passed a similar law years ago, and a Democrat president, Bill Clinton, signed
in 93. But there was no gay, discrimination issue in 93, and they didn't have an affirmative defense that you could use if you were sued for discrimination. This law provides that, so it's different. Right. But I understand that's one of the Drudge Report talking points.
Let me put things in a little perspective. I'm a gay man, all right? As far as this law, discrimination was always against people because they were black. They're not discriminating against people because they're black or a woman or even gay.
Well, let me ask you, Gene. Can I ask you a couple of questions? You identify yourself as a gay man. So what happens if you want to get married and you want to get a cake and they say they don't make cakes for you kind of people?
I go to another store. First of all, that's another issue that a lot of myself and some of my gay friends, frankly, we find this whole issue. We were perfectly content with civil unions that would give us all the protections of the law. But for you, people such as yourself that mean well, to say that equate my having sex with my boyfriend is the same as...
So you're against gay marriage?
I don't believe it's the same as marriage. Take it from the gay... I know what I'm talking about.
Listen, I defer.
Me having sex is fine. I know a lot of my friends...
Let's not get into your... I don't care about your sex life. I'm talking about your constitutional rights.
To talk about, I'm sorry, that was a bad way of phrasing. The point is, for people to equate that with a man and a woman coming together to beget a child, well, a lot of us find that patronizing on your part. And it's a pandering. There was a small minority. Every single state, including liberal states, voted marriage is between a man and a woman. Most of us gay people have common sense enough to realize that. If friends of mine have not had marriages, and I don't have a problem with that, but they know it's not the same. It's not equal to it. It can't be. It is never going to be equal to heterosexual marriage.
And so are you comfortable in your own skin and everything?
I'm perfectly comfortable. I'm no longer practicing. I'm you know, beyond the, you know, I led a pretty wild life, but you know, I'm living a solitary life now. I'm old, and also
Well, listen, you got a friend in us, Gene. I appreciate the call.
Well,
thank you.
I appreciate that.
All right, buddy. Okay, keep listening. Thank you very much. Here's William in Locust. Hi, William.
Yes, hi, Geraldo. I just want to say the survey that you came out with and that you're angry about, the real danger to America is the cancer of liberalism, and that's what's gotten us to where we are right now.
So are you serious about that, really?
Oh,
so
I'm
the cancer of liberalism bothers you more than Vladimir Putin rattling the nuclear weapons? He wants to relocate nukes in the Crimea. You know, you've got all this instability.
Wow.
Another brain fart. that's two in 2 days. That was I did get to Puerto Rico and I drink too much. Anyway, go ahead, Wayne.
Hello?
Yes, William, you're on. I've gone through my syntactical problems, but go ahead.
Right. This is the thing that has destroyed America, especially in
American liberalism.
Yeah, now, yes, liberalism.
Like what? Give me one example. Obamacare?
Everything.
Well, give me one. One that you really are really ticked off about.
That's one good one. Yeah, that's a good one.
Obamacare. Now, how has Obamacare affected your life in a negative way?
We have no military. We have disrespect for police authority.
We spend more on the United States military than the next 10 countries added together.
And where are we right now? Everything's imploding.
Well, that's a different issue. I'm not sure that's a liberal issue. That's an Obama competence issue.
And what's this? One and the same?
I don't know. Is that a siren I hear in the background?
Yes, they're coming to get me.
They're coming to get you in Locust, of all places. Maybe, but I appreciate the call, William. I appreciate the call. Thank you. Here's James. Thank you very much for your patience, James.
Good morning, Geraldo. I just have, I'm glad your mother's on the mend, first of all. I'm glad she's on the mend.
All right, God bless you for that. Thank you.
I think I have more of a legal question. If you have a pedophile living in Denver, okay, he does his time. Now all of a sudden he's out of jail, he's in the community, they all know he's a pedophile, okay? Should he be allowed to go into that bakery and order a birthday cake for a little
boy? You can't equate a pedophile with a gay person, my goodness.
New York's biggest issues right now. This is Geraldo, 77 WABC.
38 minutes after 10 o'clock. We've had a feisty morning. I'm going to get to your calls momentarily, I promise, at 866-Geraldo. But, you know, it's not exactly in keeping, with the theme that I've been talking about, how Republicans shoot themselves in the foot. But in Jerusalem, the chief rabbi of the town of Ephrat, but anyway, in the big in Jerusalem's great synagogue, an American-born rabbi, he's an American-born, Shlomo Rishkin. He's, you know, got Passover coming up on Friday. And so Saul is reporting back to me from Hebrew school, you know, what they're doing for Passover and all the rest of it. So the rabbi at the Jerusalem Great Synagogue, the American rabbi Shlomo Rishkin, they're now comparing Netanyahu to Mordecai, who helps free the Jews. Uh-huh. And guess who's Haman? Yeah, I'll give you one guess.
President Obama.
You got it. So the villain of Passover becomes the American president. And then the rabbi claims it's not a political statement. It's a Jewish statement.
You know, my Sunday school teacher would hit me if I didn't correct you. That's Purim. The holiday of Purim is Mordecai and Haman, but that's okay.
Yeah. All right. When is Purim? We just had
it. We just had it, so it counts. Yeah,
right,
don't worry.
All right. So why is he saying it now?
I don't know.
But I'm glad that he corrected you. So I don't know. It's just that I sense that American Jewish public opinion is swinging right in a way that I wonder will result ultimately in the profound political realignment of the majority of the American Jewish population. In other words, traditionally, the vast majority of Jews, 3 out of 4, in the last election, last 2 elections, voted Democrat. Will they still vote Democrat given how angry they are at President Obama and his policies? Of course, he's not up for election in 2016. But I wonder if we're not seeing a fundamental reordering of the political order within the American Jewish community.
Well, you got to think John Boehner was thinking that when he invited BB to come speak, that he wanted to see if he can siphon off some of the Jewish vote that always goes, what, 70, 80% Democratic? But that said, Hillary Clinton, I think Jews, for the most part, probably see her as a solid, solid Israel supporter. So I think it'd be hard to throw that at her.
But would Hillary Clinton stay silent, for example, on the continued expansion of the settlements in the West Bank?
I don't know. It's an excellent question.
All right, we're talking mainly Indiana, but I'm talking more generally about how Republicans like me, and I know how that irks people, that I am a Republican. And like it irks people that I'm a member of the NRA. And I do it just to torture you. I do it to torture Ann Coulter, actually.
Well, that's fun.
And I am what I am, and here's George in Queens. Thanks for calling, George. What's up?
I've been listening to you for a long time.
Well, I appreciate that.
And, well, the whole thing is you keep saying you're Republican, but I think that's a lot of bull. You, last time, okay, I'm endorsing Mitt Romney, but I'm going to vote for Obama.
Right.
Oh, I voted for Obama before that. Now you're going to say you're going to vote, you know, I like Jeb Bush. You ain't voting for Bush.
I voted for his brother in 2004.
Look, you're going to vote for Hillary. Everybody knows
that. How do you know that? What, are you going to be with me in the polling place? You know what's wrong with you, George? And I, with all due respect, and I appreciate that you listen to the show. You are intolerant within the Republican Party. I assume you're, let me finish. Within the Republican Party, you want everybody to be an ideologue. Now, you've been around long enough. I can tell from your voice. Let me finish. You've been around long enough so you remember the days of Nelson Rockefeller and John Lindsay and Louis Lefkowitz and Jacob Javits, all of whom were Republicans. And they were liberal on social issues just like I am.
A little bit.
What's that?
Lindsay was a Republican for a little bit. Come on. He went, and he went over to the Democratic side. You know that.
So you want all Republicans to be conservative,
no,
right?
Here's the story. You want diversity, but yet one state goes against your diversity Bible, which is Indiana, and all of a sudden you castigate them. You throw them into hell, okay?
I feel that there is no tolerance in this country for discrimination against anybody at all, and those who want to discriminate are doomed to fail at the ballot box. George! Hi, Zuma. Thanks for holding on.
Hi.
What's on your mind today?
Oh, hi. Oh, is this Geraldo?
Yes, hi.
Oh, I'm sorry. There's a train running. Listen, please don't cut me off.
Where are you? And no speeches.
No, I'm here in Ridgewood. Bottom line of the story is that not only the Christians and Jews, but the massive amounts of Muslims find the homosexual agenda an aberration, an affront. And we cannot just say just automatically, oh, it's, you know, like just a handful.
Are people made gay or are they born gay?
But Geraldo,
are people made gay or are they born gay?
But wait a minute. Let's not forget the issue of
answer the question.
Of NAMBLA. Geraldo, NAMBLA.
NAMBLA. Now you're going to go to child pedophilia. Come on, Lynn.
Yeah.
NAMBLA. NAMBLA Shambla. Here's Patrick in New Jersey. Hi, Patrick. Hello, Patrick.
Geraldo?
Hi, you're on, buddy.
Hey, Geraldo. I love your show, man. I was just calling in, about that survey you took where you disagree with the majority voting for Obama being the immediate danger.
Imminent threat. President Obama is more of an imminent threat to America than Putin or Bashar Assad.
I would say Obama is definitely a bigger threat because we need a president who...
Wait, Patrick, tell me what we need in a president, tell me why you think this president is more of an imminent threat to the United States of America than the dictator of Russia.
Okay, because he lives in like a la la land. Everybody knows Putin is crazy. There's something wrong with this man. And sanctions and those kind of things don't bother Putin. Putin has an agenda. We need a president that's going to, you know.
So how is Obama an imminent threat, like to your life? What are you worried about? The president is this looming threat to you, Pedro?
To me, I mean, I've watched people with the Obamacare. The gentleman before brought up Obamacare, but didn't say anything. Obama promised that if you liked your doctor, you could keep your doctor. Our rates wouldn't go up. I know multiple people who got notices at their door that, you just lost your healthcare provider, and now you're going to be paying $1,000 a month.
If you have one example of someone who's been harmed by Obamacare, I want you to cite it for me, because all I'm reading, and I'm trying to be objective about it, is they've said that 16 million people who didn't have health insurance before now have health insurance. That's what I'm reading. And I'm reading is that the increasingly hollow attempts to repeal Obamacare are obviously going nowhere. And how are you going to now disenfranchise 16 million people who have health insurance that they never had it before? What, are you going to take it away from them now? I mean, come on. Obamacare, the ship has sailed. Obama's not an imminent threat to the country. He's a lame duck president. And I've always said that the only president with the balls to deal with Israel on an even-handed basis would be a lame duck president. Because no president facing re-election would take on that lion. No president wants to take on the Jewish lobby and the whole notion of Israel as the only democracy in the region and our staunchest ally and, you know, all the rest of it that has been part of the American credo for decades now. The only president that could upset that apple cart is a president who's not running for re-election. And I think that's where Netanyahu's strategic era is now. He took on a president who was a lame duck. He did it to get himself elected. And now he has to deal with an American president who's totally pissed off at him. But I still think to consider Obama an imminent threat, what does that come from? An imminent threat. How is that? What is he going to do? Is he going to put traffic cameras on every intersection? What's he going to do? He's going to give you a little surcharge on what you pay for a quarter. I don't get that. What's he going to do? He's going to blow something up?
The sound of the city, Geraldo, where New York comes to talk. 77 WABC.
6 minutes to 11. Indiana Governor Mike Pence speaking at the top of the hour. We'll be covering that live. We're delighted now to welcome to the program Evan Perez. He's the terrific justice reporter for CNN. Evan, welcome. How you doing, man?
Very well, Geraldo. Great to be with you.
So what's with this bank robber that got out of the hospital? Is he still on the lam there, or what's going on?
He still is. The police seem to be converging on a neighborhood in Northern Virginia, in the Annandale, Virginia area. They seem to be going backyard to backyard, knocking on the front doors of houses, trying to figure out where he is. Perhaps they seem to think they've narrowed down where he is. This all began kind of bizarrely overnight because he overpowered a private security guard that was guarding him and made his getaway. And they locked down a very significant part of this area to try to find him. Now, this is a guy who was arrested just recently and is suspected in about a dozen bank robberies in Northern Virginia. He was known as the Bicycle Bandit because he made his getaway pedaled away from these bank robberies, and he's facing federal charges on that. And apparently he complained of some illnesses and maybe tried to harm himself, and that's why he was taken to the hospital.
And then I think he pedaled away from the hospital too. But what about this? The reason I wanted to have you on the program, we were talking, trying to ponder how these two men, transvestites, came to try to smash their way into the National Security Agency, and one of them ended up dead and the other one was wounded. What's the story? What's the backstory? What were two guys dressed as women doing smashing into the NSA?
Right. I mean, this is just a crazy, crazy. I mean, in all my years, it doesn't get crazier than this, it seems like. You know, this began as kind of a scary incident. We thought people were trying to smash into the NSA, perhaps, in a terrorist attack, and it turned out to be just wrong turn off a highway by a couple of people who were on drugs after a night of partying and made some very, very bad decisions. And so this all begins on Sunday when these two guys who were dressed as women were picked up by a man in the Baltimore area, and they ended up partying Sunday night in a hotel not far from the NSA headquarters. Somehow, when he woke up the next morning, they were gone, and so was his Ford Escape. And the next thing you know, the Escape is seen entering the NSA complex. Now, if you're coming down from the Baltimore-Washington Parkway, it's very easy to confuse the employee entrance for the NSA, because it looks like an off ramp from the highway, with a highway exit, which is just
so it was just mistaken, an accident, went the wrong way.
Exactly.
Evan, I got to let you go. I'm so sorry I'm out of time. Evan Perez, the justice reporter. Two transvestites driving the wrong way get shot up at the NSA. We'll be back.
He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
Mick Jagger coming back. I love the way he jumps around that stage. Exactly the same age as me. Here is Governor Mike Pence, as promised, from Indiana, explaining his new law and what he's going to do about it.
We're going to move forward. Because I, as governor, I have the great privilege of serving the greatest people on earth, the people of Indiana. Let me say first and foremost, I was proud to sign the Religious Freedom Restoration Act last week. I believe religious liberty, as President Clinton said when he signed the federal law in 1993, I believe religious liberty is our first freedom. And it is vital to millions of Americans who cherish faith, as I and my family do. But it's also vital to the framework of freedom in our nation. And this legislation was designed to ensure the vitality of religious liberty in the Hoosier state. I believe Hoosiers are entitled to the same protections that have been in place in our federal courts for the last 20-plus years and is the law in 30 other states. But clearly, there's been misunderstanding and confusion and mischaracterization of this law. And I come before you today to say how we're going to address that.
This is Governor Mike Pence of Indiana explaining his so-called Religious Freedom Restoration Act.
Talking with people across the state of Indiana, talking to business leaders, and talking to organizations around the country who have spent time in Indiana and enjoyed the hospitality of the people of Indiana, and we've been listening. Well, let me say, first and foremost, as I've said to each one of them, the Religious Freedom Restoration Act was about religious liberty, not about discrimination. As I said last week, had this law been about legalizing discrimination, I would have vetoed it. This law does not give anyone a license to discriminate. The Religious Freedom Restoration Act in Indiana does not give anyone the right to deny services to anyone in this state. It is simply a balancing test used by our federal courts and jurisdictions across the country for more than two decades. And let me say on the subject of the bill itself, I don't believe for a minute that it was the intention of the General Assembly to create a license to discriminate or a right to deny services to gays, lesbians, or anyone else in this state. And it certainly wasn't my intent. But I can appreciate that that's become the perception, not just here in Indiana, but all across this country. And we need to confront that and confront it boldly in a way that respects the interests of all involved. A personal reflection for a moment, if I can. I abhor discrimination. The way I was raised was like most Hoosiers, with the golden rule that you should do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And I believe in my heart of hearts that no one should be harassed or mistreated because of who they are, who they love, or what they believe. And I believe every Hoosier shares that conviction. But as I said, we've got a perception problem here because some people have a different view. And we intend to correct that. After much reflection and in consultation with leadership in the General Assembly, I've come to the conclusion that it would be helpful to move legislation this week that makes it clear that this law does not give businesses a right to deny services to anyone. Let me say that again. I think it would be helpful, and I'd like to see on my desk before the end of this week legislation that is added to the Religious Freedom Restoration Act in Indiana that makes it clear that this law does not give businesses a right to deny services to anyone.
And what the hell does it do?
We want to make it clear that Indiana is open for business. We want to make it clear that Hoosier Hospitality is not a slogan, it's our way of life.
Can it or can it not be used as an affirmative defense to a denial of services lawsuit?
Again and again and again. Because Hoosiers are the kindest, most generous, most decent people.
What's a Hoosier anyway?
In the world.
What is a Hoosier?
Let me say, I believe this is a clarification, but it's also a fix. It's a fix of a bill that, through mischaracterization and confusion, has come to be greatly misunderstood. And I'm determined to address this week and to move forward as a state. And I know we will.
Just repeal the
Indiana
damn law. How are you going to fix it?
Come under the harsh glare of criticism from around the country.
There's no kidding.
And some of us get paid to be under that harsh glare and that criticism, so we don't complain about it. But the things that have been said about our state have been, at times, deeply offensive to me. And I will continue to use every effort to defend the good and decent people of Indiana. I think it's important that we take this action this week. I've spoken to legislative leaders.
Yeah, the NCAA starts
all the
Friday.
Way through the last
you better take
hour,
the action before Friday.
And we're going to be working to make that happen.
Oh.
With that, I'll be happy to take questions. Go ahead.
All right, now he's taking questions. I can't hear the questions, can you?
I think someone's asking him, what is a Hoosier?
Not a hoser. Just pour him a pass.
This law does not give anyone a license to deny services to gay and lesbian couples. And look, I could have handled that better this weekend. But going into that interview this weekend, I was just determined to set the record straight about what this law really is.
Get that George Stephanopoulos.
I'm very pleased that the reporting about the Religious Freedom Restoration Act has significantly improved over the last several days. I think there is a growing public understanding that Indiana has passed a law here that mirrors the federal law that President Clinton signed, and it mirrors the laws and statutes of some 30 states. I'm grateful for that.
All right. I'm going to interrupt Governor Pence now for Governor Pence Sunday.
Yes or no? If a florist in Indiana refuses to serve a gay couple at their wedding, is that legal now in Indiana?
George, this is where this debate has gone with misinformation and frankly,
it's just a question, sir. Yes or no?
Well, there's been shameless rhetoric about my state and about this law and about its intention.
All right, so let's go back to Pence now.
Courts that they already have in our federal courts, and that 30 other states have already had for some time. Well, simply the right thing to do. It's that important.
All right, enough about this. This is a governor who had presidential aspirations at one time. Not so much you don't hear his name as much now. Now he's spoken of in the second tier more as a vice presidential prospect, who passed the so-called Religious Freedom Restoration Act. Why did he pass this? Was there any threat to religion in Indiana? I submit to you that there was not any threat to religion in Indiana, a very religious state. God bless them. I'm all for religion. This was a bill that was crafted to stick it to the progressives in the Democratic Party the left wing, and particularly to the activists of one stripe or another, in this particular case, gays. And they stirred up a hornet's nest that they did not appreciate unless and until something happened. What happened was the NCAA Final Four in Indianapolis. And the nightmarish specter. You heard from Charles Barkley and other very prominent commentators saying, pull the damn tournament out of Indianapolis. That's what he's responding to. This is bogus BS backpedaling. He passed a bill he never should have allowed to be passed into law in that state. They faced an apocalypse in terms of their economy. And he's chickening out now, and he's couching it in terms of our not understanding his law. Give me a break. This is the rubber met the road in Indiana, and he chickened out. He was going with one tiny faction of his constituency. They controlled enough of the state legislature to get this law drafted. He signed it with flourish. And then he got his ass kicked by George Stephanopoulos on Sunday. The business leader said, dude, I got to sell a million hot dogs on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. And if I sell a half a million because of you, what have you done to your state? Heavens no, I didn't expect this backlash. Well, should have consulted heaven a little more closely. We'll be right back.
From New York, for New York, live, local, on it. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
Lonely Bull. That's what's happening in Indiana right now. Lonely Bull. Herb Albert's birthday, my neighbor in Malibu back in the day. Very active with the Los Angeles City College. I emceed their fundraiser. He was honored. Mike Pence, the governor of Indiana, really getting beat up. You know, he's backtracking on his so-called Religious Freedom Restoration Act. He's still speaking, fielding questions, making it seem as if Indiana was attacked by all these foreign people outside of Indiana. But it was a front page editorial in his own Indianapolis Star today, folks. The headline of the front page editorial. So just picture like a Daily News or the New York Post, a front page editorial. Fix this now. So now he's going to fix this now. In other words, he is going to ensure that the Religious Freedom Restoration Act cannot be used to discriminate against gay people. In other words, the law now provides an affirmative defense. If you don't want to serve a gay person and they sue you for discrimination, you can, the person being sued, the baker or the florist, can use the law as a defense against the civil lawsuit. The only way to fix the law is to make it clear that this cannot be used as a defense to a lawsuit. And if you do that, what else is in the law?
Well, I'm confused. You're the lawyer here. What is left in this law? If you can't use it there, where can you use it?
I thought that that was the sole purpose of the law, was to allow you to use your religious beliefs, your sincerely, deeply held religious beliefs, as a defense against the lawsuit that you are discriminating or denying services to someone. That's the intent of the law. Now, if someone knows that there's some other reason for the law, and that's the one that he has to fix, obviously, that's the whole thing, because it can be used by people who discriminate against gay people. So if you can't use it as a defense to a gay person's lawsuit against you, what is it for? I don't know. Why don't you just say, we made a mistake. Don't fix the law. Repeal the law. Anyway, this is dumb. Really. I'm so over this. I'm telling you, Jeb Bush is such a smart guy. And you should see him on education. He's terrific. And I know there's a lot of people out there don't like standardized tests and all that. I am all for standardized tests. I want people to have I don't want social promotion. I want to standardize. I mean, George Bush has the courage to stand up to the teachers' unions. I mean, Jeb Bush has the courage He's great on immigration. He's great on economic tax policy, national security. But how does he join Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio in backing this law? And here you see Indiana dumping or dramatically diluting their own law now. They're all, I don't understand why we can't win on real issues like the economy. The way, I mean, Republicans used to be business people. When did we become social engineers? Avery's been holding on so long from Elmira. Avery, please, I accept my apologies, and I appreciate your patience. Thank you.
You're the best. But anyway, a couple things before I get to my point. I don't know how you can even want another Bush. I mean, no matter, even if he's the best of them all, I like the father. I just, you know, you should look into Rand Paul.
I like Rand Paul, but he can't be elected.
And he doesn't believe he can be, because he doesn't believe that, you know, the imperial United States it hasn't worked. And the other thing I was going to say about the Indiana rule.
But I do like Rand Paul. I mean, I just don't think he can be elected, but I do like him. And in many ways, he mirrors my point of view more than anyone, including Jeb Bush. But I don't think he's electable. But go ahead, Avery.
Yes. And my point of view, my take on the Indiana law is like, I'm completely heterosexual. And there was a time when, you know, in high school, you weren't very friendly to the other side, but
right.
And you know, it's just people will never, in some states, will just never accept, you know, two men in you know, middle America walking around and making out. You know, they'll do whatever they possibly can to try and you know, jab them a little bit. I don't know, but you know.
So you think that's what's behind this? Kind of just.
Well, I think it's just, you know.
Skeeve. We used to use the word skeeve. Is that
it's
a bad
not
word?
Pretty, but it's
no.
What?
Like something skeeved you out?
Yeah, something skeeved me out. I mean, the Greenpoint in Williamsburg, that was big in those days.
Yeah.
But so is that it, Avery? I mean,
some people really get, look, Geraldo, I'm as liberal as you get, but this is the first time since 1980 I'm going to be voting for a Republican. I love Rand Paul. I love it.
Well, you know, it doesn't make you a bad person, dude.
No, but I just, you know, I get a little, you know, my stomach gets a little sour when I come into New York City and you see it, it's in your face a lot. It just does something to you. I don't know.
All right. I got it. Don't go too far. I don't want you to get in trouble here or me either. But you know, I'm a live and let live person. There's a lot of things I see that skeeve me out, and most of them don't have to do with people's sexual preference or the way they're flamboyant. They have to do with people that are cruel, unkind, bullies. A lot of things really bug me. That's what I'd like to see. I'd like to see a governor who's a fighter against the bullies. And
Geraldo, live, local. Today's most important New York stories. Only on 77 WABC.
Indiana Governor Mike Pence still trying to defend his action in signing into law this freedom, Religious Freedom Restoration Act, so-called. And he seems like a nice enough guy. I mean, I have nothing personal against him. I just think he made a stupid political move. The economic reality came back to haunt him, bite him in the backside, and now he's trying to back out.
Speaking of this week, you know, you would think the eyes of the world are on Indianapolis, a great week for a city like that.
Really?
And then to bring this up sort of seems like you knew. How could he not know it would be controversial?
I talked about being bitten in the ass. Did you read about this coyote in Long Island City?
Yeah, I think there's something weird about
how
this
did a coyote get into a bar in Long Island City?
And did you see who the act was? I think the singer's first name who was singing there that night was Coyote something. So I think there might be some sort of prank.
Isn't there something about a coyote? I mean, isn't there, like, if you pick up an ugly person, it's a one coyote, a two coyote?
I've never heard that before.
You never heard that?
I've heard one beer, two beer. You know.
No, no. What the coyote is, if you and you wake up with someone, and, you know, one coyote is you bite your arm off to get away.
Oh, really?
I forget there. Then. But I remember coyotes in Van Cortlandt Park. I mean, it's
there's one right now.
That the you know, Van Cortlandt Park, at least it's like adjacent to the woodlands of Westchester County there. But
Long Island City
on the roof of a bar. I don't. Oh, and I we're gonna get back to your calls. I promise you. But you know, I was thinking more. We kind of had to rush Evan Perez, the justice reporter for CNN, who came on to help us out about this bizarre shootout at the NSA headquarters. And it turns out it was two cross-dressing prostitutes who were ripping off a guy, John, that they had a trick with. They steal the guy's car and they take a wrong turn and they drive it into the NSA. And then they have a shootout, two transvestites having a shootout with the feds. I mean, it's just such a,
they had to be hammered, because if you've ever driven the Baltimore-Washington Parkway, the signs for the NSA, they're huge billboards that say, you know, you can only come in if you have the right ID. I mean, it's really clear, so I don't know how they would have missed that.
But imagine if you're the guy, the SWAT team guy, and you're having the shootout, and this grizzled, bearded woman is shooting. Anyway, it is bizarre. But, okay, now it's your turn. The governor is saying you need legislation that will clarify the original language in the law. I don't think they Carlos, what are you thinking in Yonkers? Thanks for calling 866 Geraldo.
How you doing? Love the show. I think that what's really offensive to me is that Pence is saying that he's talking as though the people of Indiana passed this law.
Yeah,
he's offended. He's offended that they're offended. I mean, I don't get it. He passed that law.
He passed it, and it was a faction of his legislature. I agree, and that's a very astute observation.
Not only that, but I think that, you know, the Republican Party has this religion thing going where they have this majority, the moral majority of religion. We don't. But, you know, and I'm a Democrat, but, hey, I would love to see a good fight between Bush and Hillary. I think that's a great matchup. One last thing about the comparison that Putin actually is more popular than Obama. I mean, that really, really speaks to the amount of hatred and, I think, racism, unfortunately, that we have for this man. In other words, they don't see the 60 weeks of growth that we have. They don't see
60 months, isn't it?
60 months. Yeah, 60. They don't see 16 million people that have got health care. They don't see oil prices going up. They see a black. And by the way, he's not the president for the black people. As a matter of fact, the black people have been railing against him that he has not done enough for them. But you see, the point is that, you know, there's so much. One morning, I think, they woke up and said, oh, my God, there's a black man in the White House. And beyond that, they can't get over it.
Talk about that coyote. Thanks, Carlos. Okay, let's see. I got so many interesting callers. Let's take Nat in New York. What's up, Nat?
Hi. Three things. First, I'm very glad your mom is feeling better.
Oh, thank you.
And my deepest condolences to her and to you about the loss of your brother.
What a sweetheart. Thank you.
Well, I haven't had a chance to talk to you since then. And the second thing is, we look to the president to be our guardian, our protector. And just like we have babysitters to take care of our kids, what's more of a threat to our kid? Some brute who might hit our kid, or a babysitter we can't trust? And then the third thing is
well, that... Back up, Matt. I'm not letting that analogy go by unscathed there. Are you saying that the president is a pedophile?
No, I said a brute who might hit your kid. What's worse?
The brute who would hit the kid, or the babysitter you can't trust?
A babysitter is protecting your kid.
So which of those is President Obama in your analogy?
So the analogy is that the president is our protector, right? If he is trustworthy, we got no problems with anybody in the world. On the other hand, if he's untrustworthy...
And so why is the president untrustworthy?
Look what he's doing with the Iranian deal.
I don't mind the Iranian deal at all. What I mind is the whole Middle East is going to hell in a handbasket.
Well,
and now I'm glad you brought it up.
Okay.
I got to say something. I've been thinking about the Middle East, and I don't think people understand. Now, you see, the Saudis and the Egyptians are getting together with the Jordanians to bomb the faction in Yemen. So now you have Saudi Arabia, Egypt, Jordan bombing Yemen. And you have, now notice that Saudi Arabia, Egypt, and Jordan are not bombing, as far as I know, lately. I mean, Jordan did it for a couple of days after they burned the pilot. They're not bombing in Syria or Iraq. They're bombing in Yemen. And they're not helping the offensive by the Iraqis against the ISIS. In the, you know, I know that this confuses people, but let me just tell you what's going on here in the Middle East. It is all about religion. It is the Shiite Muslims fighting the Sunni Muslims, and all the rest of it is a bunch of baloney. The Saudis have no interest in fighting ISIS. because ISIS, like them, are Sunnis. The Egyptians have no interest in fighting ISIS because ISIS, like the Egyptians, are Sunnis. But they're bombing in Yemen because who are they bombing? They're bombing the Shiites in Yemen. It's so clear to me that this is all tribal warfare in the Middle East. And the only time you get an ally on your side, like now Iran is fighting on the same side we are against ISIS, is because Iran is Shiite, ISIS is Sunni, so Iran is fighting ISIS because ISIS is Sunni. Not because ISIS is interrupting the other country. And it's all baloney. They're fighting them. It's just like Protestants and Catholics during the Hundred Years' War. It's Sunnis versus Shiites. And all of our calculations should be based on that. Nothing should surprise us when this one bombs that one or undermines this one or does this or does that. It's all about the promotion of your religion in that region. And that's what it's about. So you get the tiny little Jewish state in the corner as these gigantic Muslim factions fight each other now. They're fighting each other. That's the one good news for Israel. They're not fighting Israel right now. But this is the thousand years war in the Muslim faith. I don't know where it will ever end. It will never end. Neither side will ever be dominant over the other. And so this Christian, Judeo-Christian nation of ours, we're looking and we're baffled, but we have to strip away all the baloney. It's all about religion in the Middle East, and it's all about Shiite versus Sunni. Everything you see, everything that you read, every action that is taken, reduce it to that, and 99% of the time you're going to be right. Now Pakistan wants to get involved in Yemen. Pakistan, not even contiguous to the Middle East. Why? Because Pakistan is a Sunni country. So the Sunnis want to fight the Shiites wherever they can fight them. This is a Muslim civil war. And how did we get into it? How do we get out of it is a better question.
Get Geraldo now. Get in on New York's most important stories. 866-GERALDO, 77 WABC.
Before I let you go, it's 5 minutes to high noon. They caught the guy, the escape prisoner who escaped from the hospital in Virginia. They just got him. That's the bulletin. They're going to brief in a couple of minutes on that one. Did they catch the guy from Newark, Newark Hospital?
No, Elijah Shabazz.
He's still at large.
Yeah, he was brought to University Hospital over the weekend with chest pains, a prisoner. There was two police officers that were supposed to be outside his hospital room the entire time. But when they went in yesterday to check on him, 11 a.m. with the doctors, he wasn't in the room.
So he's still gone.
Yeah.
All right, so one for two on that. The Indiana situation is almost comical to see how Indiana's twisting and turning, but if they have to repeal at least that one section that allows the law to be used as an affirmative defense to discrimination claims. Otherwise, they're going to be screwed, and there'll be all kinds of unpleasant things happening. Guns, by the way, is heading to Indianapolis to cover the Final Four for us, so Guns can give us the latest as soon as he arrives there. On the sideshow that's going on now. I'm going to take one last call from Lakewood. David's on the line. Hey, David, thank you for calling.
Hey, Geraldo, how are you?
Good, man.
You got me all fired up today.
Ooh,
you know,
good,
right
good.
Before Passover, and I'm really upset.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I actually agree with this law. I'm not a rabbi, but imagine if I was a rabbi and somebody comes to me and they want to get married in a sin. What we feel that our Bible, that our Torah feels a sin. I should be required to marry them and not turn them away and go against our own holy Torah.
Well, that's an interesting question. I don't have time to resolve it. Now, does the law, can you sue a rabbi who refuses to marry you or a priest or a minister or, you know, whatever? That's an interesting question. I would suggest that it does not allow you to sue the rabbi, but we'll talk about it tomorrow. Thanks for listening.